Matthew Sakayestawa Gilbert grew up in a community of running. He's an enrolled member of the Hopi tribe, and even as a child growing up in Flagstaff, he says he would run with his family in Buffalo Park. The Hopi people have a long history of running, and in his new book, Hopi Runners, Crossing the Terrain Between Indian and American, he tells the story of some of the Hopi runners who made history in the early 1900s. I spoke with Sakayestawa Gilbert more about it recently and how their stories changed the way America thought about Native people.
The first Hopi to emerge on the American sports scene in the early 1900s was a Hopi individual by the name of Luis Tawanima. Luis Tawanima and this group of Hopi men were causing problems for the United States government because they refused to send their children to off-reservation Indian boarding schools. And in 1907, he along with this group actually arrived as prisoners of war, wards of the United States government, at the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania. And really quickly, Luis Tawanima gained the attention of a very well-known football coach called Glenn Pop Warner. And Luis Tawanima had a conversation with him and told Glenn Pop Warner that he could run and that he could run well, and emphasized that all Hopis could run well. And so in 1907, Luis Tawanima joined the cross-country team, and he did so well at Carlisle, winning various different races, that he actually had an opportunity, earned the right, to represent the United States at the 1908 London Olympics. Mm-hmm. And this is at a time where most American Indians were not citizens of the United States. But here, Luis Tawanima, formerly a prisoner of war sent to this school, and now he's on a world stage representing the nation that had essentially incarcerated him at a boarding school at the London Olympics.
Yeah. So place this in history for us a little bit. You mentioned that most Native Americans weren't even citizens at this time, but what was going on in terms of the state of Native American tribes throughout the country?
In part, it was a grim situation. The Indian Wars had already taken place. You know, we are post-Wounded Knee. You have these various different Indian reservations and American Indian communities that are attempting to survive, right? Attempting to survive as a people. There are various different ethnographers being sent out by universities across the United States to go and record various aspects of American Indian culture, whether that's their dance or song or customs, because Americans believed that Indian people were a vanishing race. So there was at least an attempt to try to save some of this culture, at least whether it's in recording or in written form. Mm-hmm. And in the minds of most Americans in the early 1900s, American Indian people were on the fringes of U.S. society. They were off on their reservations. And yet what we have with Luis Tawanima competing in the 1908, but then also 1912 Olympic Games in Stockholm, Sweden, he then becomes in the center, representing the nation in this world stage.
Yeah. So what does something like that do to, I guess, the national consciousness of who Native Americans and Hopi people in particular were at that time? How did that change things?
Well, I think it pushed back against this notion or this understanding in the minds of a lot of American people at this time, non-Native people, that the American Indian people were backwards or savage or were coming from these primitive cultures.
Yeah. So I understand also that running historically for the Hopi people is almost a religious practice, right? And there's like a sacred element to this. So I wonder if you can tell us what you think this history of running, which continues today also, of endurance, I guess, says about the Hopi people.
So in my book, I title the introduction to The Fence and Back. The title of that introduction comes from a conversation that I had with a very well-known Hopi filmmaker by the name of Victor Masayasva. And Victor had come out to Urbana-Champaign a number of years ago, and I knew that he was a runner. And while he was out here visiting, I had asked Victor if he wanted to go on a run with me. And so we went to a nearby park, and we were running, and we were talking. I remember during this conversation, I had asked Victor, how many miles do you run when you're back at Hope Velo? What is your daily routine look like, or what does that look like to you? And I was expecting him to say, oh, you know, I run 3, 4, 5, maybe even 10 miles at a time. But he actually gave me an answer that I wasn't expecting. He just simply looked at me. He kind of chuckled a little bit. And he says, oh, you know, to the fence and back. And it was a really wonderful moment, a learning opportunity for me. Here I was, this scholar who's dedicated a lot of my career to this particular topic. And yet it was a teaching moment. He was reminding me about this cyclical aspect of Hopi running. In my mind, I was wrapped up. I was very much into a Western concept of running, where runners are often very concerned with, and I think oftentimes obsessed with, this concepts of distance and time.
Yeah.
And he was talking to me about the cyclical aspect of going out and coming back. And so in Hopi religious understandings of running, the various different clans, some of these clans were given the responsibility to run long distances far beyond Hopi's ancestral lands to entice the rain clouds to follow them back to the mesas. And the idea was, or the belief was, that the faster the runner ran, the quicker those clouds would follow the runner back to the mesas to give much needed moisture to the dry and arid fields, the agricultural fields. It's this idea of going out and coming back, going out and coming back, the cyclical aspect of Hopi running that I really hope to emphasize and really wrap the whole book around this idea in the manuscript.
All right. Matthew Sakayestua Gilbert is a professor of history and the director of the American Indian Studies Program at the University of Illinois. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.